This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
And I'm Yehiz Wuhiben, coming up this hour on Africa News Tonight.
How will Donald Trump's election as president impact Africa? The top concern and area of uncertainty is how his policies could affect markets and trade deals. Some analysts also think his presidency may steer African leaders toward more conservative social policies.
That's VOA's Jill Craig reporting from Nairobi. Details coming up.
Also, President Obama welcomes President-elect Donald Trump to the White House today. And a coalition of 53 society groups in Zimbabwe is urging broad legislative and political reforms ahead of the 2018 presidential elections.
We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight.
Our top story this hour, President Obama welcomes President-elect Donald Trump to the White House today to help ease the transition to a Trump administration in January. Mr. Trump had vowed to overturn many Obama policies and programs if he won the election, including the national health care law and the nuclear deal with Iran. Those programs would have continued under a Clinton administration. First Lady Michelle Obama is also expected to meet with Melania Trump, while Vice President Joe Biden meets with Vice President-elect Mike Pence. Following his meeting at the White House, Donald Trump is scheduled to meet with Paul Ryan, Speaker of the House of Representatives, and Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell. On January 20th, Republicans will control the White House and both houses of Congress. Mr. Trump arrived in Washington today on his own private jet.
How will Donald Trump's election as president impact Africa? The top question and major area of uncertainty is how his policies could affect markets and trade deals. Some analysts also think his presidency may steer African leaders towards more conservative social policies. VOA's Jill Craig reports from Nairobi.
Some are excited, some are worried, and some are not bothered one way or the other. But regardless of opinion, Africans are asking themselves how a Donald Trump presidency might affect them, politically, socially, and economically. Botian Marc Essis is a political analyst at the University Institute of Abidjan in Ivory Coast. He says the African Growth and Opportunity Act, enacted in 2000, could end up on the negotiation table. He says, regarding the trade deals between Africa and the United States, there have been studies regarding the AGOA showing that the negative impact is quite limited for the United States, but anything can happen. And such an analysis, he says, relies on what Trump said he would do once in power, which is to renegotiate every international agreement signed between the U.S. and their global partners. Some are concerned Trump might also withdraw from the Paris Climate Accords to reduce global warming, a move that could have major implications for Africa. In terms of governance, Charles Aboun, an international relations expert in Cameroon, says he expects the United States will exert less pressure on African countries to change their social policies.
Governments, especially in Africa, that were stressed by human rights issues on abortion, on homosexuality, conditioned on aid development, will be more comfortable with a Trump presidency because we are going back to conservative politics in the United States of America.
Adams Olu, chairman of the political science department at the University of Nairobi, argues the time has never been better for Africans to find their own answers to the continent's problems.
I think that what Africa has to do is to prepare for the worst case scenario, which would mean that the America under Donald Trump would focus first on American national interests and not necessarily on global interests and not necessarily, therefore, on African interests. And if there was a time that Africa should start thinking of African solutions to African problems, the time is now.
President-elect Trump said little about Africa or Africans during his campaign. 2 days before the election, he did say the state of Minnesota has suffered from hosting Somali refugees. On election day, he lost the state to Hillary Clinton. Jill Craig, VOA News, Nairobi.
Thank you, Jill. Well, Muslim Americans are preparing for life under a new president who initially proposed banning foreign Muslims from entering the U.S. following several terrorist attacks in the United States. As VOA's Kane Faribault reports, there is widespread concern and uncertainty among Muslim Americans about what a Donald Trump presidency means.
It was an outcome few people at an election watch party at the Arab American National Museum in Dearborn, Michigan expected. A Trump presidency.
Trump has run on racism and bigotry. He's monetized it, in fact, in exchange for votes. And we see the results of which on TV. And it's a scary thought.
Election night for candidate Abdullah Hamoud, who successfully won his race for the Michigan House of Representatives, was filled with mixed emotions.
It's a strange contrast, right? For the first time in Dearborn's history, they've elected an Arab American Muslim, first generation. And at the statewide level, we may be supporting Trump. At the national level, I have a Trump presidency.
Hamoud knows some people in his district supported him and voted for Trump on the same ballot.
It's scary that I was with my family earlier today and I was celebrating, but tomorrow morning I may wake up and speak to my mother and my sister who wear the hijab and tell them to be careful when they leave outside the front door.
It shows for me that racism and bigotry has prevailed. It shows me that I've never lived in a post-racial society. And it shows me that certain communities aren't wanted in this country, including my own.
But rather than be consumed with apprehension and fear, Asha Noor, who works as an advocacy specialist for the Arab Community Center for Economic and Social Services, or ACCESS, is ready to take action.
Get our message out there. Show people who we are. Show them that we're not going anywhere. This is our country just as much as it is anyone else's country. We contribute. We have always contributed to this country.
Arab American News publisher Osama Siblani says many Muslim Americans voted for Hillary Clinton, but were not enthusiastic about her candidacy.
They're very disgusted with the election. I don't believe that American Muslims or Arab Americans have really a favorite presidential candidate. They probably are voting for Clinton just because they are against Donald Trump, not because they are convinced that Hillary Clinton is the best candidate that this country should have.
It was an historic election for the Arab American News. It marked the first time in its 32-year history it did not endorse a presidential candidate. Not only did Siblani withhold an endorsement, he did not vote for a presidential candidate.
You know, I'm a Republican myself, or I was a Republican. And I believe that the Republican Party have really damaged its connection and links to the community, and they should work very hard to mend fences.
A task that falls to Republican President-elect Donald Trump, who will work with a Republican-controlled House of Representatives and Senate. Kane Faribault, VOA News, Dearborn, Michigan.
A Canadian researcher says Donald Trump's speaking style may have helped him win the Republican Party primaries and ultimately the presidential elections. Professor Delroy Paulus is a personality psychology researcher at the University of British Columbia in Vancouver. Paulus explained to reporter William Eagle how some elements of Trump's rhetoric helped convince voters that he was decisive, confident and energetic, and the best candidate to improve their lives.
Yeah, well, we looked directly at the speeches, and we had objective raters coding for grandiosity, which would be basically boasting and exaggeration, as well as counting using a program designed to do it, various kinds of word categories, including first-person pronouns, I, me, mine. And indeed, Mr. Trump scored highest compared to all the other competitors on both of these measures of grandiosity. Presumably, the reason for its appeal is a sense of confidence, a sense of extremity and promise in a grandiose self-presentation as opposed to a modest one.
Is there any risk that this type of style could also backfire by making, for example, a candidate seem egotistical or a braggart or a bully? I would think that in some cases it would be very divisive and could also sink a candidate unless there were other elements that were appealing to voters.
Yeah, it's partly a subjective reaction, I guess, but it appears that the bulk of the Republican voters, at least, responded positively. I've done a lot of work, actually, on initial reactions to narcissistic people, and it's usually positive in the short run. Now, if you meet them over and over again, and they become irritating and obnoxious, but in terms of giving public speeches, meeting people in short-term interactions, narcissism seems to imply the kind of confidence and casualness that appeals to people.
Have we seen this style of politician, including the smoothness with language and other politicians in the past?
Grandiosity was just one of the three factors that we looked at. The second one was informality. And so in combination, you've got someone who feels comfortable enough to be informal as well as very confident. I think that combination appeals. And the third one was dynamics. So if you talk in a monotone and don't change your pitch, it's not as appealing as someone who goes up and down. So you put all those factors together and you've got this unique combination. I don't know if there's really anyone in parallel. You have the Obama style, which is certainly appealing. He had the cool factor going for him, and that made a difference. So that would be partly a combination of style, but certainly not the same as Donald Trump's.
Mr. Trump was, for many years, as we know, a reality star in his own show, The Apprentice, which gave him years to perfect his delivery and also his persona. Does training in the media, particularly as a show host or a reality television star, give would-be politicians the communication skills they need to succeed in politics?
Yeah, I'm sure it does, especially in things like tuning into your audience and responding to your audience in a way that's maximal appeal. In the case of Donald Trump, though, it appears from looking at his history that he was always that way. I just heard something about his sister said you could never win an argument with him because he never conceded anything, even as a child. So it just turns out he has the style that appeals in show business and in politics, at least to certain audiences.
I think appeal, as you just said, must be very important because you do want to project an image along with your vocal style that makes you appealing. In his case, an irony is that there are many people who found him divisive, and he, along with Senator Clinton, had very high negatives.
Yeah, so perhaps he was lucky in a sense by being compared with Clinton that his negatives didn't seem so bad because they weren't that much different from Hillary's. If he had run against someone who had a more likable style, a little more casual than Hillary, he might have been defeated. But so it was a combination of Trump style, dramatic and bombastic, kind of the opposite of Hillary.
Who I understand, I had read that her team had been trying to work with her on her vocal style and simplifying her message. And it would appear that at this point they were clearly not successful.
No, it's pretty hard to overcome your communication style. These are traits that have become part of you, your identity, your self-image over the years. And if you think of yourself as a deliberate, thoughtful person, then even if your team tells you, well, you better make it a little more charismatic, not that easy to do if it's counter to your character.
That was Professor Delroy Paulus of the University of British Columbia in Vancouver. He was speaking to reporter William Eagle.
You're listening to Africa News Tonight live on the following frequencies, 15, 580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
I'm Yehi Swuhib, and at 20 past the hour, here's a recap of our top stories. President Obama welcomes President-elect Donald Trump to the White House today. And the presidency of Donald Trump may steer African leaders towards a more conservative social policy. And for more news and information, visit our website at voaafrica.com.
Well, Donald Trump's victory in the U.S. presidential race is sending a chill through the U.N. climate talks taking place this week in Morocco. The summit aims to put policy details on last year's landmark Paris Climate Accord, but Trump has pledged to tear up that agreement, to reopen coal mines, and push ahead with shale oil and gas projects. Henry Ridgewell looks at the potential impact of a Trump presidency on efforts to combat climate change.
Donald Trump's victory in the U.S. presidential race has sent a chill through the U.N. climate talks taking place this week in Morocco. The summit aims to put policy detail on last year's landmark Paris Climate Accord, but Trump has pledged to tear up that agreement, to reopen coal mines and push ahead with shale oil and gas projects. Henry Ridgewell looks at the potential impact of a Trump presidency on efforts to combat climate change. The Paris Climate Agreement seeks to limit global warming to 2 degrees Celsius above pre-industrial levels, largely through reducing emissions of greenhouse gases. More than 100 countries have ratified the deal in just 1 year, including the United States and China. Remarkable progress, says Professor Samuel Fankhauser of the London School of Economics Grantham Research Institute on Climate Change.
One of the reasons why we have the momentum that we currently see, why we have Paris and the fast ratification of Paris, has been US leadership.
US President-elect Donald Trump once described climate change on Twitter as a hoax concocted by China to undermine the competitiveness of US industry. On the campaign trail, he vowed to tear up the Paris deal within 100 days of office and refocus on US energy independence.
We're going to put the miners back to work. We're going to put the miners back to work. We're going to get those mines open.
A U-turn by Washington could undermine the global efforts to reduce emissions, says Fankhauser.
Taking that leadership role away would create a vacuum. That's no question about that. The good news, if there is good news, is that once the Paris Agreement is in force, as it now is, and the US is a member of it, leaving it is quite a lot more difficult than never joining it.
Delegates gathering at UN climate talks in Morocco fear their progress could be undone. Wera Manasseh Chilanga is from the Malawian delegation.
If he withdraws, it means everything is going backwards and it will not be good for the world.
Observers say the full impact of the Trump victory will not be known for several months, leaving an uncertain future for the landmark Paris Agreement. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
A coalition of 53 civil society groups in Zimbabwe is urging broad legislative and political reforms ahead of the 2018 presidential elections. The Zimbabwe Election Support Network says a presidential vote under current electoral laws would violate the Constitution. The network includes groups representing human rights, media, and other civil society interests. They met for 2 days in Bulawayo this week to examine current election laws and the Constitution.
Turkey issued a decree last January allowing work permits for refugees. However, an overwhelming majority of Syrians and other asylum seekers, mainly from Africa, are abused in informal and low-skilled jobs. Nuria Tesson reports for VOA from Istanbul.
Turkey hosts over 3.1 million people, the world's biggest refugee population. Most of them are Syrians, but there are other vulnerable groups of asylum seekers. Somalian nationals are the biggest group with almost 4,000 people. Regardless of their nationality, one thing is clear, life is difficult. Only a small percentage of the refugees in Turkey have the necessary work permits. To survive, they have to work illegally. They have no rights and receive low wages. Numan Özcan, director of the International Labour Organization Office for Turkey, explains why refugees end up in the underground economy.
Lack of information, they don't know that they can work legally, and the employers don't know that they can get work permits for their workers. This is one thing. The other thing is, of course, the cost factor. If they get a work permit, of course, they should earn at least minimum wage. And on top of that, they have to be insured. There is a cost of social security and the tax. So the cost will be much higher if they work formally and legally. That's the main reason the employers prefer to employ them informally.
In January, Turkey issued a decree allowing work permits for foreigners, giving temporary protection. But the procedure to receive the work permit is so complex and costly that very few have applied. The legal minimum monthly salary in Turkey is 1,300 Turkish lira, or around $400 US. But the income that migrants receive in Istanbul varies. African migrants without work permits are employed for about $125 US a month by furniture manufacturers. Syrians say they earn between half and a third of the going salary for the same work done by Turks. It depends on the work, but based on the minimum wage, they get paid around $100-$200. Children are paid even less. According to Human Rights Watch, more than 400,000 Syrian children in Turkey are working in the informal economy instead of continuing their education. Many end up working in factories that make clothing for international retailers. The Business and Human Rights Resource Center says many brands deny refugees of any age are being exploited in their supply chains. Numan Özcan, head of the International Labour Organization in Turkey, says there should be more factory inspections.
The labour inspection should take a more active role to find out these cases of child labor. But also the enterprises must be more responsible, more responsive, that they shouldn't employ the refugee children. I mean, these big companies, if they are buying from these small workshops, they have to also show a kind of responsibility to make sure that in their supply chains, no child labor is present.
International brands are willing to make more audits of so-called first-tier suppliers. The problem, according to the Business and Human Rights Resource Center, is that the brands announce in advance the audits intended to check that supply chains are free from labor exploitation. For Voice of America, this is Nuria Tesson in Istanbul.
And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehiye Suhib in Washington.
And I'm Kim Lewis. And for all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com.
For listeners on VOA's Nairobi FM station, please stay tuned for the Swahili Evening News coming up at 16:30 UTC.
For all other listeners, please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports. Tune in again at 1800 UTC for another edition of Africa News Tonight. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Nick Ivanov, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Hello, I'm Douglas Simpoga. Join me for Reporters Roundtable every Thursday at 17:30 UTC. We'll take an in-depth look at an African news topic important to you. We'll have African journalists and expert guests share their ideas on the topic at hand. So, please plan to be with us every Thursday at 17:30 UTC, right here on The Voice of America.
Hello, Africa. This is James Brotte, host of Daybreak Africa, inviting you to join me every weekday morning at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC as we bring you the latest in African news, features, and sports. You can also be a part of Daybreak Africa through our listener mail segment by sending your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. You can also call us and leave us a voicemail at 202-205-9942. That's 202-205-9942. And when you hear the Voice of America identification, press the number 25 to leave us your message. Start your day with Daybreak Africa every weekday morning at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC on the Voice of America.
VOAAfrica.com. on voaafrica.com. The news updates never stop. Our primary goal is to keep you informed.
voaafrica.com, your trusted source for news and information.